We begin this next item with a big finish. This musical mix is called At Last. It's all endings, and fittingly so. It marks the end of David Morneau's year-long project, and it's on his website today. Morneau, a doctoral candidate in composition, has been composing one 60-second piece every day for a year.
I kind of hit a creative block with a couple other projects I was working on at the time. So I was looking for a way to try some new things and also just for a way to sort of develop a little more discipline in my composing life.
And you felt that the discipline of having a daily deadline to come up with 60 seconds of fresh music every day would help you break through the creative block you were experiencing?
Yeah, because people work differently under a deadline, and having a deadline every day would never give me a chance to really procrastinate and sort of fall into the old habits that I had developed.
But did you risk trading in one big block for 365 little blocks?
I did risk that, and there were lots of days where I experienced little blocks, and working on this project was sitting down and finding a way to get past that block quickly.
I want to play a bit of the piece of this piece called String Cheese.
Okay.
Now, here's a reality of modern radio. You write a 60-second piece, and we'll still fade it under because we don't want to hear the whole thing right now, the entire composition. But that's first of all, are we hearing strings or are we hearing synthesized music?
You're hearing sampled strings. Those are part of Apple Computer's GarageBand software. You know, so I took those, and then the drum stuff underneath is kind of a famous sample in the hip-hop world called the Amen Break.
Well, of course, this all raises the question of what the rules are, that you set for yourself about a 60-second composition. Obviously, you're sampling and you're using all kinds of sounds from various sources. Must each 60-second composition have a beginning, a middle, and an end?
Not really. I mean, some of them are just about making one sound last for a full minute and seeing what that feels like and what that sounds like. And then some of the other ones are really more about finding a way to build a miniature structure within the 1 minute.
On the other hand, one that simply takes a single idea and develops it a bit is Mellow. That's one of your compositions.
Mellow is one of the pieces, you know, it developed one idea, and it's also one of those pieces that was about finding my way past a mental block.
Gotten a little bit unblocked there from Mellow. Yeah. Here's one you wrote. It's called Glass Break. I think more than one listener right now is remarking in some way, either to him or herself or to the other person next to them, this is music?
Yeah. And I'm happy if people want to think of some things like that as sound art. I used to be more concerned about that question. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, I like to work with all kinds of sounds in sort of all different ways. And I, of course, think of it all as music. But I know that that's kind of a hurdle for some people. And calling it sound art or, you know, some other term is fine.
In the course of this year, right. Did you ever find yourself in such a good creative mood that you could get a jump on a week and do six of them in one day and be set and then take a couple of days off?
The most I've ever done in a day was three pieces. And, yeah, I was very excited about getting a jump and then thinking that I would be able to stay ahead. But, you know, 3 days later, I was back to not having anything prepared.
This may say something about creative blocks and about deadlines. Yeah. You just can't get that far ahead of yourself.
No. That was very hard. And it was hard. A lot of days it was hard to find the time to just compose one with everything else that goes on in a day-to-day life. So finding the time to do two or three was very, very difficult.
Well, David Morneau, thank you very much for talking with us about it.
Thank you, Robert.
That's David Morneau, who has written a 60-second piece of music every day for the past year. And you can find a link to all of his compositions at npr.org.
American composer Leroy Anderson was born 100 years ago today. His unique music remains timeless. There will be Anderson tribute concerts this year from Ecuador to Sweden, along with a 5-CD collection of his works. Some critics have placed him in the same sphere with George Gershwin and Aaron Copland. Anderson's name isn't as well known as his music, but as Pat Dowell explains, it doesn't really matter.
If the name doesn't ring a bell, the music certainly will. Sleigh Ride is a Christmas fixture, as commonplace as a snowflake pasted on a window. Anderson wrote The Syncopated Clock while he was a military intelligence officer. CBS TV adapted it in the 1950s as the theme for its original Late Show. And The Typewriter is a Pops concert staple. The 1950 composition features the manual typewriter on stage with the orchestra. In 1970, Anderson demonstrated in his home studio for Connecticut television station WTIC how he made the machine sounds a part of the music.
And I don't have a typewriter. I have a bell here. The reason we have a bell, it would be impossible to set the carriage of the typewriter. So you want to ticka 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 bing, and have the bell come right there. We have two drummers, by the way. A lot of people think we use stenographers, but they can't do it because they can't make their fingers move fast enough. So we have drummers because they can get wrist action. Mm-hmm. So they play ticka 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 bing, ticka 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 bing, and this comes back on the beat.
Leonard Slatkin, conductor on the new Anderson CDs, has played a few typewriters himself on the concert stage, and he says it's hard.
It is. You have to tamp down all the middle keys so that only the two outside ones work, and you have to start with your right hand in order to be able to hit the carriage return where Anderson specifies.
The composer's music has been a favorite of Slatkin's for years. The departing music director of the National Symphony Orchestra is known for presenting concerts both of challenging contemporary music and popular American composers. He points out that Anderson's music has always been popular.
The nature of the Pops concert has changed so dramatically over the last 25 or 30 years that we forget there were masters of the art of writing the short miniature specifically for this kind of occasion.
Jazz Pizzicato, a minute and a half of energetic plucking, was Anderson's first composition, and it was debuted by Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops in 1938. Leroy Anderson spent most of his life in the Boston area. He grew up in a family of Swedish immigrants who played music together. He said he got his education from grade school to graduate school on one street, Broadway, in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
The Harvard Yard was on one side, and the graduate school is on the other side by the law school. I went for the most part to the music building, to Payne Hall. If I'd walked a few steps longer, Farther down, I've often thought I might have been a lawyer.
Anderson did almost decide against a career in music. He was set to take a job as a language instructor. He was fluent in five, including Icelandic and Old Norse. But his arrangements as director of the Harvard Band caught the ear of Arthur Fiedler, who encouraged him to compose. Anderson created his music at home, says his widow Eleanor, in his head.
He said that he didn't like to use the piano at the beginning because your fingers tended to fall into familiar patterns. And it was only after the basic elements of the piece were in place in his head that he would go to the piano and use that.
Anderson was so much in his head that his widow and his son Rolf both describe him pacing through the house after dinner, unaware of everything around him.
I remember once I was reading something interesting in a magazine or a book, and I thought it would interest him. And as he walked through the living room, I said, "Dad, you'll never believe what it says here in this book. It says," and then I looked up, and he had left the room. He really had never heard me at all, didn't hear me speaking to him. He just walked right on through, and that made it very clear to me that there was no point in even trying to talk to him at this time of the day. He was busy thinking of music.
And he was busy. Leroy Anderson composed more than 200 pieces, including a concerto and a Broadway musical, Goldilocks. And in 1952, Billboard named Anderson's instrumental, Blue Tango, the year's top-selling single. It was at once a parody of Latin torch songs and a passionate example of one. That ability to transform and preserve classic structures has endeared Leroy Anderson to such musicians as Leonard Slatkin.
You know, I've always thought of this music as being as sophisticated as any of the so-called big names that we do. It's just that he did it in miniature. So is it any different for a short Leroy Anderson piece that parodies or tries to pay homage to a dance form like the saraband? Is that any different, really, than Mozart, who would poke fun at the same form, or Brahms, or Schubert, or Mahler? I don't think so.
Saraband is Slatkin's favorite.
Because it embodies what he tried to do, and that was to create a work that took some structure from the past but made it relevant for the audience listening at the time. I mean, it starts off as it could be a little bit of Bach, it could be something French, then there's a slight jazz rhythm that goes on near the end. So he's playing about with it. He's really having a good time with it.
And Leroy Anderson did it all in less than 3.5 minutes, which certainly plays to the attention span of today's busy consumer. For NPR News, this is Pat Dowell.
And this is Leroy Anderson's Sandpaper Ballet. You can hear Leonard Slatkin conduct up some of Anderson's best-loved pieces at the music section of our website. That's npr.org.
America has a long tradition of traveling musicians. Artists of all types hit the road to play in dead-end bars and dimly lit basements, often for little more than gas money. Nowadays, gas money wouldn't be a bad night's pay, except fewer bands can afford to go on tour. Charles Michael Ray of South Dakota Public Broadcasting reports on what that might mean for your local aspiring rock star.
Great, thank you.
Thanks.
Jay Whalen Porcupine just dropped $50 in gas into a 1995 Chevy van.
$50 gives you 13 gallons, and it's kind of sad because this is a 30-gallon tank.
Porcupine is the frontman for the band The Red Men, In the last 2 years, the three-piece band from Rapid City, South Dakota, has driven about 30,000 miles in this van, hitting small towns and big cities across the country to play a unique version of pop punk, including this fast and loud piece titled This Year's Mono. This song isn't about high gas prices, but after spending $50 on less than half a tank, Porcupine can't help but to look back at the way things were, when a band like his could afford to take its act on the road. He remembers when they could get paid $50 or $100 at a small show and have enough money to make it to the next town.
This kind of lifestyle, this way of life, just might go extinct because of the gas prices, really. Just, you know, we haven't toured in a couple months, and it's just, we've been really just rethinking the game plan.
A lot of musicians are rethinking their plans. One of them is Minneapolis-based Haley Bonner. The 24-year-old artist is about to release her fourth CD. The title track, Big Star, seems to lament the desire to reach for fame. To promote her CD, Bonner is planning a cross-country tour this summer. Even with new forms of internet marketing, she says going on tour makes a big difference.
It's a good thing to be in those cities as that's happening because, you know, people are hearing your music, hearing your name, reading about you and whatever. It's really the best time to go and do that.
For her upcoming tour, Bonner is budgeting $2,000 just for gas. She says if gas prices continue to go up, she won't be able to afford to tour anymore. The price at the pump has forced some musicians to cancel their tour plans altogether. Others are finding alternative ways to travel.
I'm touring on a canoe from Buffalo to New York City.
Right now, Christopher Bell is touring in California in his 97 Toyota Corolla. But in mid-July, he'll trade his car for a canoe and head down the Erie Canal, hoping to stop and play some of the towns along the route.
I have never done an actual long canoe trip, so I'm planning 20 miles a day, which I've been told by another guy who's canoed the whole Erie Canal that should be fine.
Bell follows in the footsteps of troubadours like Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger, the kind of musicians who are driven more by the love of music than by fame or money. Bell is optimistic that high gas prices won't kill off touring musicians.
I think it would be a sad day if it did. People will find a way, and music will get out. People will still see shows.
If you live along the Erie Canal, keep an eye out for Christopher Bell this summer. Maybe he'll play you the song called Oh, How We Danced, if that is, his arms aren't too tired from paddling.
Everyone here, it seems, is lost from all the dreams and all I want for you to come back to me.
For NPR News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Americans are getting ready to celebrate the 4th, and some of our neighbors to the north are also marking a major birthday in July. Thursday is the 400th anniversary of Quebec City, one of the oldest cities in North America. To join the party, we brought in our own Breath of Wind from the north.
Oh, Rosette, petite Rosette, y'a ben longtemps que je t'ai pas vu.
This band that you're hearing is called, literally, Wind from the North, or Le Vent du Nord in French. And two of its members have joined us from our studios of the CBC in Montreal. Good morning. Bonjour, I should say, I suppose.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Would you please introduce yourselves?
I am Nicolas Boulris, and I play accordion, piano, I sing, and I also play the hurdy-gurdy.
I'm Olivier Demers. In the band, I play violin. And I do also the foot tapping.
We'll hear more about those feet in a minute. For now, let's just say that because this music is of Quebec, It's a mix of everything and everyone who ever lived or landed in that province. You have French lyrics, Celtic tunes, an Irish jig or two, even the music of Native Americans. Band members Nicolas Boularis and Olivier Demers say these songs are like antiques, and they collect them.
We do try to preserve the repertoire who is not already picked or recorded.
Yeah, a lot of people, it's Nicolas talking, a lot of people told us we're like gardiens de la tradition.
Guardians of the tradition.
Yes, a little bit.
Something like that. The old people want to know if you're respectful, you know, if you sing those songs in the way of the tradition.
This is the magic of it. We want to keep the real soul of the fiddle tune with that little crooked part or that little out-of-tune way typically from Quebec to play it.
Give us an example of one of those rare songs that you collected from, an older person and that you treated with the respect that it was due.
We met a guy in Saint-Guillaume. It's a village like 45 minutes out of Montreal. I don't remember why we heard about that guy. I think the mayor of the village, he said, oh yeah, we have a very good singer in the village. And we said, why not? So we just knocked at his door and we said, hello, we are musicians. We love music. And we started drinking and singing with him. And he had a wonderful voice. And he sang many kind of beautiful songs. And one of them, it's La Beauté du Mariage, The Beauty of the Wedding. It goes a little bit like that. Quand on y parle du mariage, oui, c'est joli passe-temps.
Quand on y parle du mariage, oui, c'est joli passe-temps.
Oui, c'est joli passe-temps, je n'oserais le dire.
Car si ma tendre m'y partait, je souffrirais le martyr.
Olivier Demers, I heard your feet on a board.
Yes, exactly. And it's the traditional percussion in Quebec. Because in the kitchen parties in the big family, because of our Catholic ancestor, we had like 15-20 children in the same family.
Per room.
So the Saturday night evening was very important. Probably there was one fiddle player and the fiddler had to do the foot tapping to make them dance all in the same beat. We can dance on very crooked tunes like 1-1-1-1-1. It's not 1-2-3-4.
There's one song on the CD. It's La Fille et les Dragons.
Yeah.
La Fille et les Dragons.
And,
exactly.
And I'm curious about it on a number of levels. One is what it says. It's a little story, which is sort of strange and dreamlike.
Si vous en tournez en France, vous ferez mes compliments.
Vous en tournez en France, vous ferez
mes compliments à tous mes parents et à ma sœur Angélique.
You know, the dragon, we're talking about the woman and the dragon, if we translate La Fille et le Dragon, it's, they are the knights.
Like dragoons. Yes.
In fact, the young lady decide to stay with those soldier. She just said, you know, that guy just
brushed my hair,
the other one cleaned my house, and I'm just sitting on the knee of
the third one. So I'm very happy. I don't want to go back home.
One thing about the song is it goes from this sort of ancient dream-like space to a sort of modern feel.
It's our kind of scat. We call that turlute. It's also to imitate the flute, was very, very popular instrument. And in French, when you learn flute, you have to do tu-tu-tu-tu-tu-tu-tu with the mouth. So it became turlute. So it's a way to fake, because we didn't have a lot of musicians, but we have a lot of singers.
Yeah, it's also a way to express joy without anything. You know, the life was very hard here for to cut the trees and to try to survive, and it's quite north, so as you imagine, the winters, especially this winter, was like 6 meters and a half of snow. But at the time, you know, with not that much heat, and it was hard life, but without any fiddle, without anything, they got together to make this beautiful place called Quebec now.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Ah, pleasure. Merci.
Thanks for inviting us.
Olivier Demers and Nicolas Boulouris, two members of the four-person band from Quebec, Le Vent du Nord. This weekend, while folks here in the States celebrate the 4th of July, our friends to the north mark the 400th anniversary of Quebec City. Later, this band will be heading our way, too.
Le Vent du Nord will be in the USA and plenty of festivals this summer, so come to hear us and come dancing with us.
A bientôt.
A bientôt.
A bientôt.
Ben, les bagues que je te donne pas ne te feront jamais mal aux doigts.
Ben, les bagues que je te donne pas ne te feront jamais mal aux doigts. Je donnerai à une autre qui sera de mon goût. Et toi, petite Rosette, tu seras oubliée.
Hear more songs from Le Vent du Nord? Please look for the music section at npr.org. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Ari Shapiro.